geek. Talking baseball every week. Cause the D-Man and the Geek.
And welcome to Gleeman and the Geek, the controversial edition. A week of controversy. Eric Gleeman of TheAthletic.com. Says John Bonas of TwitStation.com.
Yeah, that's your best one, yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, brother.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Yeah, here's the funny thing.
Did you get to read Red Bull's story
today? I tweeted about it already, and somebody already got mad at me for tweeting it. Somebody goes, one of the replies from someone whose name I'm fairly certain is a listener, so Jacob, I think, if you're listening to this, I know your Twitter handle strictly because you like almost exclusively send me angry things about the Twins, so much so that out of the thousands of people who follow me, I recognize your Twitter handle, and he's very upset. I think he said that
we're making fun of people who are very upset.
I think his quote was, "Why are you insulting the people who are responsible for you having a job?" And I thought, boy, we're going right to that, huh? Okay, well, sorry. I mean, I do appreciate that.
Why are you doing that, Aaron?
I'm a jerk. The jerk store called and they're all out of me. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing you mentioned half jokingly, but it's half true, is
Red Bull Stew's headline.
It was a great headline. Read the headline.
It is. I'm trying to pull it up now. Do I not have it here? So, Twins fans absolutely furious at surprise first place start.
Right. And the article is basically, it's very funny. You should read it. Rambo Stu, our friend, former multi-time guest, I think,
He's been a guest, yeah.
Including co-host one time.
Yeah, on KFAN, actually.
Yeah, many years ago when I was stuck in Wisconsin meeting the in-laws, I think, for the first time.
Is that when that was?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the only reason I would have missed the show. I thought maybe they'd bury me on their farm or something and I would never make it back, but I made it out alive and here I am. No, but obviously... We're half joking about that controversial week, but it's sort of true in that there's been a whole bunch of stuff here that has gotten, for some reason, I mean, I know the reason, 0-18 in the playoffs, last place finish, the overall state of Minnesota sports in general, the Wild just got knocked out, the Wolves just got knocked out.
There's a lot more to talk about.
Right, all that stuff, a lot of media members suddenly now turn their attention to the Twins and maybe haven't been paying all that much attention to them previously, and they're just want to rile people up. I get all that. But yeah, the Buxton injury and days off situation, right. And I say situation very with quotes. Right. You had the Royce Lewis call up, thrive, sent back down, and some other things
and
too.
The Chris Paddock trade.
Chris Paddock, Tommy John surgery, which was announced yesterday, all that stuff. But the funny part is, I think, especially with the Buxton situation, I've never seen a, you know, quote unquote controversy spike up so high so quickly where people were just up in arms and screaming and upset and everything, and then go back to nothing so quickly. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe every time he gets a day off, which is going to continue to happen, it's happened already once since then,
right.
It'll spike up again. But here's the thing, as long as they keep winning and as long as he's healthy and playing well, what controversy? That's sort of my thing. Now, I say that. I'm going on Barrero's show at 3:30 today, and I didn't hear it, but people have told me that he's been going off on that for a week now or whatever. But
I think it's an ongoing bit at this point.
Yes.
I think they're tracking how many games he's going to have a pace to play.
Many of the longest tenured media members in the Twin Cities, and many of the most successful, I mean, by virtue of being longest tenured, they're the most successful.
Right. Yeah.
Barrero. Patrick Royce, another former guest, and several others. One of their talking points always in any sport for any player in any season is injuries. And they take a very opposite approach to that than we do. We often talk about how we want to make a point to say that injuries are not some moral failing. They are not some, the player asking out of games. It's part of the sport, and the idea that people should be angry at the player for being injured is absurd. Well, many people don't take that same stance. And right. So when players are injured, I mean, if you go look at like Royce's tweets over the last, 20 years, 10 years, the majority of them are either, I guess ripping PJ Fleck, but also just ripping guys for being injured. And now if you go look this week, there's a lot of them about Buxton.
Right.
As if Buxton is like saying to them, I feel fine, but I don't want to play. Or the Twins are saying, you feel great, but we're not going to play you anyway. Great. But that's not really happening. And we try to present that. And I get that maybe is a newer school what we take a way to do it, and some people disagree with that. So I'm hoping I go on Barrero and he can do a rant about Buxton. And hopefully and I can explain the situation.
I did hear Barrero talk a little bit about that. He will tell you, his point is not that he is upset with Buxton.
Right,
his
he's upset with the Twins.
He's upset with the Twins. That, right. You know, I don't think he's blaming Buxton for the timeout. He's blaming the Twins for not letting him try to play through some things, which we should – I mean, we should just talk. We should probably summarize what happened on Saturday afternoon.
Well, first of all, it goes back to the first road trip of the entire season almost exactly a month ago. It was in Fenway, right?
It was in Fenway.
Buxton hit a blooper or like a weak fly ball to left,
right.
I want to say, or right, left, right?
A Texas leaguer.
And it was supposed to be caught, and it was not caught. They lost it in the sun or whatever. And he was just sort of running the ball out and had rounded first, but was not going full speed because he thought it was just going to get caught.
Right.
And then it wasn't caught, and he had to accelerate very quickly, and then he slid awkwardly into second base.
Right.
And he was safe. But he immediately slammed his helmet down,
writhed on the ground,
jumped
a little
up,
bit,
basically hopped around, and then walked right off the field.
Right
before the trainer could even get to him.
Met the trainer midway
on the way
midway
back to the dugout.
Right,
and we thought, and he thought, based on his comments afterward, I tore my ACL, or I tore worse than that. Who knows?
Right.
Ankle injury, ACL. Who knows?
I thought it was an Achilles.
Right. I mean, it looked very bad, and given his history, you know. It turned out he just suffered sort of a run-of-the-mill knee injury, and that's when people started to kind of get upset about this again, because his injury situation will always get people riled up, because people want to see him play all the time, and people don't necessarily understand, the inner workings of it. But it turns out he missed a week, basically, instead of a year, what people thought.
Right.
And he came back, and he's been exceptional all season. He's got 11 or 12 homers. He's got a 1,000 OPS. He's got all kinds of clutch hits. I mean, he's been fantastic.
Right.
However, he is still dealing with soreness and swelling from that knee injury. And as that's continued a month later, the Twins have decided twice now in the last, week, basically, week and a half, we're going to give him scheduled days off. We're going to tell him either the night before or when he arrives at the ballpark, you're not playing today, and we mean this 100%. We don't mean you're not in the starting lineup, but stay ready to come in defensively or pinch hit, which famously they lost the game last Saturday,
which is what,
It ended up being an extra inning game where he never appeared,
right.
And there were lots of spots that he could have pinch hit for Nick Gordon or Celestino.
There were lots of opportunities that were very clutch, high-leverage situations where you'd love to see
Bucks. And people got very upset with that. And I actually think that part is debatable. It's subjective, obviously. The Twins clearly think, at least with him, and they're not alone here. I might write about this, but there's some other star players who have gotten the same treatment.
Correa got the Twins 3 weeks earlier.
Right, which is you're out of the game, and we don't mean stay ready. We mean you got today off.
Game. Right.
And whether that's a mental thing, a physical thing, whatever, it doesn't surprise me that people react strongly and negatively to that, because a lot of people go, well, why can't he just pinch hit? What does that take?
Right.
Well, you got to warm up. You got to stretch. You got to go down to the cage and take some swings. All that stuff that people sort of dismiss. They think the same people will go, well, they're playing a kid's game for a living.
Sure.
They think that you just sit on the bench for three hours and go up and pinch hit.
I'll also say this. I mean, one of the things that I think Buxton is especially cognizant of is the same sort of thing that Josh Donaldson was especially cognizant of. You have to do some warm-up stuff and such to get ready for a game.
Right.
Because he has just been so injury-prone. I think there is
an
extensive routine he goes through.
Absolutely.
Lest he comes in and hits a game-winning double and slides into second base, rocking you, something like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not the NBA where there's a foul and the guy can't shoot his free throw and you just call someone off the bench to go shoot a free throw. Like, you can do that. Anybody can do that. I'm not saying it's the most taxing thing in the world. I'm not saying pinch hitting would have killed them or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But clearly the Twins believe that in a full, true day off has more value than a partial day off or a, hey, be ready.
Right.
And look, I can tell you.
And significantly more value, because those are high leverage situations.
Right. It has to have more value. Otherwise, you're really giving up value on the other end of not having them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Right. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. But
we have no idea if that's true. I mean, they have no idea if that's true.
That's
it's just all guesswork. I mean, I'm sure they have some research on it. But I will say this. Yeah, I mean, I certainly would.
Which is what everybody's kind of debating.
Trend on the side of I would pinch hit him in a tie game in the ninth inning. I would work towards that. But I will say, in everyday life, think of the difference in whatever you do for a living. Maybe you're a blogger. Maybe you're a podcaster. Maybe you work in a factory. Maybe you're a salesman, whatever. There is a significant difference, let's say. Let's say you work all week and a Friday comes up and your boss says to you, you got the day off. Take the day off. Unscheduled, but we're telling you night before you got the day off.
Right.
First of all, it's great to know the night before.
As opposed to, you've got a couple phone calls at 3. Maybe, right. We might need to pull you into some phone calls at 3 o'clock.
Think of the difference. If not from a physical, but although, like, right. I would take a nap. But you can't take a nap if you think you're going to get called on. But think of the mental difference between you don't have to be heard from.
Do the Twins still have a nap room for Byron?
Well, no, I'm hoping.
Now that Nelson
I want to start using it. Now that Nelson Cruz is not using the nap room. I believe they've turned it into like a video room or something like that. Right. But think of just the difference for non-athletes of a true day off versus, hey, we might call you at 3:30 if we need some help on something. Like, it does change your plans a little bit. And again, I'm not trying to make a bigger deal of this than it necessarily is, other than the fact that people are freaking out. So my reaction is to usually go the other way. So he's gotten another day of rest since then.
Right.
And then he was asked about it. Baldelli was asked about it. Correa was asked about it and had a very funny quote basically saying, anybody who's questioning this doesn't know S about baseball and all that, which got people even more riled up. But here's ultimately, and we talked more about this, I guess, on the Patreon front the Monday after it happened or something like that initially. But my sort of big view of this is there's a lot about the Buxton situation that is debatable or arguable or sort of subjective,
right.
Unknown. You know, is it better to get a full day off? Is it better to pinch hit? You know, should they be playing him as long as he's healthy? Because at some point he's not going to be healthy. All this stuff. But the two things that really stand out to me are, one, they're in first place. He's playing exceptionally well, and he's avoided the injured list so far. What are we mad about? Do you know what I mean? Like, big picture.
Right. Yeah.
And then beyond that, all this stuff about, hey, they're not being forthcoming. It took, you know, asking the tough questions to get answers about this. They've been very forthcoming about his injury and his hip. I've written about it. We've talked about it. Oh, he has hip problems now.
Yeah, are they going to announce before the game he's absolutely off limits? Right. Are they going to do that? No, of course
not. No, of course. They're never going to do that. Every time, I will tell you this. Every time Buxton is out of the lineup, I ask, if someone doesn't before me, of Baldelli, we have a pregame media session. Right. I say to him, is this an injury? Is this a scheduled day off?
Right.
And is he available off the bench? I've probably asked that if he's missed 7 games like that. I've probably asked it 5 times. And somebody else has asked it twice. And Baldelli will say, no injury, no new injury, nothing new. Right. It was a scheduled day off. We told Byron he was going to get today off. And he'll be available off the bench. And then, like Saturday, he doesn't appear off the bench in a spot where there were clearly situations where he could have appeared off the bench. Right. And then post-game, media happens, and I asked this.
Right.
I said, Byron did not appear off the bench. You said he was
available.
There
were several opportunities.
Right. Was this a situation where he was just off limits? And Baldo said, yes, he was down today, which is baseball speak for unavailable today. He'll often say a reliever was down. You know, Joe Smith worked back-to-back days. He's down today. Unavailable except for a true emergency. Could they be more forthcoming pregame and say Byron Buxton will not appear in today's game? Yes. But just like a football coach or a hockey coach will not reveal that about injury before the game, they don't want the other team to know you can bring in a lefty to face Nick Gordon with no threat of Byron Buxton coming off the bench to pinch hit. Right. When there is strategic elements involved or value to be gained from that information by the other team, they're going to be less forthcoming about it. I understand that. But the idea that they've been hiding his injuries or something like that is absurd. Everyone saw him hurt his knee. Look at his leg in the outfield. He's got a wrap on his knee all the time. The hip thing, he came out of a game with the hip injury and said he thought it was related to the knee. Like, I wonder how much of this is my perception hearing every quote from everyone and reading every transcript or transcribing half it versus people who are just checking in once in a while and think to themselves, boy, they haven't talked about him having a knee injury at all. And it's like, they've talked about that every day. We just don't write about it every day because it was a month ago.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I wonder how much of it is that. But
yeah, I also wonder, I mean, the news that, you know, there is basically a plan to try and, that there is some sort of master plan in place.
Right.
That, you know, potentially gets him, you know, 100, 110 games, something like that, to try and get him to 100 right. games. I mean, I think that is, I guess it's, you know, I would anticipate what most of the concern is. They're just setting the bar too low. You know, that in fact, no, listen, let's have a plan to get him to do 120 games or something like
that. Well, they are going towards that. Well, people took that 100 quote very literally.
Well, like, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, people took that very literally. And, you know, the other thing is that, like, really what they're trying to do is, like, we're trying to get him to play more games than he plays. You know what I mean? Like, ultimately, we're just trying to keep him healthy all year. We think we can, you know, get at least 100 games out of him that way. And, you know, this is how we're doing it. We're doing it with a lot of days off. We're doing it with some DH appearances,
yes.
You know, and we're really paying a lot of attention to his knee. You know, if his knee ends up swelling up or something, well, maybe we take it easy that day. By the way, my knee hurts right now, and I am not running. That, you know what?
You didn't take because off from the podcast,
idea.
Did you?
No, I did not take it off my day off the podcast.
Yeah,
because right.
We're like coming in to shoot a free throw, like I said earlier.
Right.
Yes, I mean, I think here's the other thing. If he didn't have knee swelling and hadn't injured his knee and continued to have soreness and had now had hip soreness
right.
potentially related to that, he wouldn't be getting these days off.
Right.
They were playing him when he was close to 100% healthy. Now it's a very small window when that's happened this year and for his career. Right. They're not giving him days off. These are not scheduled all season, like locked in. You know, he's going to sit out one every 5 days. The reason he's getting these scheduled days off now is because his knee's swollen. Like what? For any other player, you go, oh, yeah, he's taking today off, his knee's swollen. You go, oh, that's good. Got to maintain, you know, maintenance day.
Right,
you know,
right,
hopefully
right.
his knee's
right.
better tomorrow or something like that. Yeah. Like what? I don't know. The Buxton and the stuff about his salary. He's got this contract. You know, you can't pay this part-time player $15 million.
Why are they signing for a seven-year deal if they're not going to play
right.
him every day?
He's already been worth $15 million this year. By the way, he's only being paid $9 million this year, but he's already been worth $15 million this year.
Right.
He's been worth almost two wins above replacement.
Right.
He's been one of the most valuable players in the entire league already. So, you know, he's only going to play 100 games. If he played 100 games, he'd be worth double his salary. Like, what are we talking about? Like, there's so much in a baseball season to get truly worked up about. And God knows with the Minnesota Twins especially, there's going to be stuff to get worked up about.
Right.
Maybe they don't make the playoffs. Maybe they do make the playoffs and get swept out again.
Right.
Get worked up there. But my God, enjoy something. You know what I mean? Like, enjoy something. And I'm not telling you to dismiss criticism. But my God, they're in first place 6 weeks into a season after being in last place. Their best player is playing really well and has avoided going to the injury list,
yeah.
which is not the case in most seasons.
Right.
It may not be the case later in this season.
Yeah.
Right. Like, let's
seriously not.
So, yes, go. I don't know. I mean, I think.
You know what I'm going to enjoy?
Hold on. Let me just, before you segue off this, let me just hit every point that I want to
make. Okay. All right.
On Buxton. But
I'm going to sit back.
Here's the other factor we talked about a little bit. No, I'm done.
I know.
This isn't even a rant. I don't
know. By the way, if you want a full rant, go check out the patreon.com/Gleeman, the episode on Monday where we reacted to all of the furor around this on that weekend. It was.
Keep in mind, the furor surrounding.
Furor?
I don't know. One's Hitler and the other is
anyway, it's
people
furor,
being upset.
Then. Furor.
Yeah, like, let's maybe choose a different word.
Yeah.
The upsetness. It's not a word. By the way, what are people upset about? Boiling it down, a constantly injured player is receiving semi-regular days off.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Oh boy, get the pitchforks! Like what? I'm just so baffled. Anyway, part of this that we didn't talk about yet, and that makes it easier or more palatable from the Twins' point of view, at least, and should be from fans' point of view, to give him these days off, is the difference in caliber of backup today. Than last
right,
season
yeah, right.
or previous seasons.
Right.
It's not Jake Cave being stretched very thin in center field. It's not last year's version of Gilberto Celestino
right.
looking like he had never played baseball before.
It's not Max Kepler
having to
shift over there, and we'd lose our right field.
Right. It's not Kyle Garlick starting in center field because they have no one else. It's not Rob Refsnyder trying to learn a new position on the fly. Celestino, this year's version, looks great defensively and very competent offensively.
Hitting 300, right? Yeah, right.
I mean, there's probably some luck involved in that.
Sure,
or something,
of course.
But
there
defensively,
is.
That was how he was billed. The surprise was last year when he didn't look competent.
Right.
Now he looks very good. And beyond that, Nick Gordon looks like a perfectly decent backup center fielder, too, when asked. Right. He's their third-string center fielder.
Right.
They also could still turn to Kepler occasionally and slide him over to center field, where he's perfectly decent and has been in the past. He just doesn't like to play there regularly. And so, and we'll talk more about this momentarily, but Royce Lewis might get some reps in center field at some point, too, and become a backup option there. So it's a completely different story. I mean, obviously, no one replaces Byron Buxton. He's one of the five best players in the world on a per-game basis. He's one of probably the five best players in Twins history on a per-game basis, the way he's performed over the last three or four years.
And we get wanting to see him more.
Absolutely.
Right.
I want to see him 162
times. Right.
But there's even within the fact that he needs days off and they're trying to manage injuries and all that stuff, just giving him a day off or moving him to DH, as you mentioned, well, you need a new center fielder. It's just a much less of a drop-off, or you're hurting yourself. You know, there are just much better options today than there were last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And, you know, who knows how Celestino will hold up over a full season? Who knows Nick Gordon, same thing, all that. You know, it might be different if Buxton misses a month and that guy, you know, one of those guys has to be an everyday player versus, you know, mixing and matching or whatever. But they have very solid, multiple very solid backup center field options. And that's something, by the way, we've been crying for for years now.
Right.
And I was frustrated that they didn't bring in a veteran like that, a Kevin Pillar type, I always say, to be a fourth outfield, but really more like a three and a half outfielder, a guy who's going to start semi-regularly and can fill in for Buxton for a day, for a week, for a month. And it seemed odd to me that they didn't bring in a veteran along those lines. And then when he gets banged up early in the season, sliding into second base, and he misses roughly a week, you're like, oh, here we go again. It's going to be Celestino again. Well, Celestino looks great.
Maybe that's why
they didn't bring in a veteran center fielder. And Nick Gordon looks decent too. So I think that's part of the equation here, that it's not going from Byron Buxton to a replacement-level player or worse right now. It's going from Byron Buxton to a perfectly
they
decent
center
fielder.
They feel like they can
cheat
it a little bit.
Just be on the side of caution, which is the whole idea here with Buxton.
Here's when you really want Buxton healthy. October.
Well, that's the other thing. We've seen this over and over again, which is he's going to get hurt. I mean, he's been hurt twice already this season. Two different injuries. He's going to have more injuries. I mean, that's just either it's how he's built or the fact that he accelerates harder than everyone and runs into walls and all this stuff, everything. Or he just has bad luck getting hit on the hand by a pitch and breaking his hand or whatever. I mean, that's all those facts. He's going to get hurt. So the question is just, can you minimize the time missed? Can you maximize his ability to come back? Can you, if possible, make it so that he's injured but not on the injured list as much as possible, which they're doing right now? And then the biggest thing is, well, is he going to be there if they make the playoffs? Is he going to be in the lineup? Because
August and September, when there's a pennant race, you want Buxton healthy.
But that's, I don't know how you figure that out. I mean, how do you plan for 4 months from now? First of all, you got to make the playoffs because you're going to need him to get into the playoffs, which is kind of their plan now. Okay, before we get into the Correa, Lewis, all that stuff.
While you are wondering where Buxton is on the lineup on Sunday afternoon,
let's hear this.
I'm going to be at Grillfest. The St. Paul Saints have Grillfest at CHS Field, and along with me there is going to be SodaStick.
They're
setting up a stand there. So, you know, sometimes it's different. We always encourage you to go online because they always have new stuff there. They have stuff that's out of stock. They have stuff that's in stock. They have new stuff that's just come down. They're releasing probably a new product every week, basically.
Yeah.
You know, something kitschy and cool. But if you're just somebody who wants to be hands-on, they're going to be at Grillfest both Saturday and Sunday
at
CHS Field.
Look at the caliber of the shirt. We've gotten shirts.
Exactly
we've worn
right.
shirts.
Yeah.
They're
good shirts.
They're not just these ones you buy off the internet and they get printed on something and sent. These are actually like comfortable, good shirts. The designs are good. The graphics are high quality.
You can check out the Minnesota Town Ball shirt. That's one of theirs that is more popular right now, the one that's just one more year on it, which I just love. Everybody I do play Town Ball.
If you go to SodaStick, soda like Minnesota.
Yes.
sodastickco.com or just Google SodaStick, and you put in the promo code Gleeman, you get, what do you get?
15% off. Yeah, that's right.
That seems too good, John. 15%
off. Yeah, 15% off if you go online or just swing by there.
Yeah.
You can
if you scream Gleeman at them, what will they?
I bet you they will.
Or they
will. I'm almost sure Landon would do that.
Or call security and have you escorted out. Either way, you have a story. Either way, it's a story.
If you're at CHS Field, try this. If you're at CHS Field, first of all, say hi to me if you see me at Grill Fest, because I'm going to be...
Yo, Gleeman at him, too.
Yeah, I'll give you 15% off. Yeah. I got you 15% off right here.
15% off a knuckle sandwich? Is that what you're going to get? I like tough guy John.
You get the whole thing off.
Yeah. Five-finger discount. All right. We also...
Sponsored also by Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday, which it is... Memorial Day.
Hypothetically, the weather's going to start to get nice consistently.
Yeah,
theoretically,
it is here.
Yeah, you want your lawn to look good. Here's what Sunday does. It can sort of streamline the process of making your lawn look good. A couple of different ways. One is they take this overhead satellite shot of your actual lawn.
Right.
So they can tell you the exact dimensions. But beyond that, they can tell you like what type of soil it is.
Yeah.
What type
of grass Minnesota, in this area, here's the type of soil that you
generally
have.
And then they can recommend, here's the stuff that will work the best on that.
Right.
Then they put together a package.
And
then
they tell you, here's when you want to apply it.
Right.
And then they ship it to you in time for you to apply it. And then you just hook it up to a hose.
Yeah. Super easy.
Oh.
And you don't want to be the one lawn in the neighborhood that looks like garbage, believe me.
I wish this product would exist before I had a condo.
Yeah.
Every year I'm like, do I go to the rental store and buy a fertilizer spreader and get the mix right, and then I burn the crap out of my lawn? Oh, geez.
So go to Sunday. Right. Here's what you need to do. They're offering Gleeman and the Geek listeners 20% off. You can get a full season plan starting at just $129, and you can get 20% off at checkout when you go to Get Sunday, Sunday like the day.
Yep.
GetSunday.com/Gleeman. That's 20% off your custom plan at GetSunday.com/Gleeman. All right, let's move on to the second controversy of the week, which is
Wednesday's show on Patreon. Yeah. Patreon.com/Gleeman.
Let's see. Let's try to go back to the beginning on this one. Carlos Correa, first of all, Royce Lewis went 28 months. I went back and counted exactly 28 and a half months.
Okay.
Not quite 29 without playing in an official game.
That's the Arizona Fall League one?
Middle
of November?
November of 2019.
Right.
He won the MVP of the Arizona Fall League.
Right.
Following a really underwhelming season at single A and double A for the Twins, when he hit .230 and people were starting to question. Then he went to the Arizona Fall League and he played like 20 something games and had a great stretch.
And by the way, utility. Yes. The role.
Then 2020 season was wiped away by COVID.
Right.
He participated in the camp in St. Paul behind the scenes and actually got, in terms of the people I talked to when I was trying to put together prospect reports and stuff, they said he looked good.
Right.
He had made strides defensively.
Especially defensively.
And they had sort of tightened up his swing mechanics, which was a big question the year before. And they were very, and he was very, talking to him, optimistic heading into last season.
Right.
And then about a week before spring training
ready to show him what he could do, and found out that
he never got there because he tore his ACL in Texas working out, basically getting ready for spring training.
Yeah.
Showed up to spring training and said, my knee kind of feels weird.
Yeah, they're like, how you doing? He says, well, I'm pretty good, but my knee's acting up a little.
And they looked and it was a torn ACL.
Right.
And so he missed the entire 2021 season as well. And entered this year as something of a question mark, was assigned to AAA, which was a little bit surprising that he didn't go back to AA.
That was a surprise to
me. Looked pretty solid during spring training, but was still not 100% and was not participating every day in games and stuff, but it was kind of on the backfields a lot and everything. Then he goes to St. Paul, and he plays like 25 games for the Saints.
Oh, yeah, we should just mention, his spring training was also delayed. Because he was on the 40-man roster.
Right.
Right. So,
unlike other prospects, Austin Martin was able to be there because he wasn't on the 40-man roster. Just a terrible situation.
Right.
All around. The guy missed 2.5 years, basically. But then they sign him to AAA. He plays 25 or so games for the Saints. He hits .320. He draws more walks than he ever 1,000 has.
1,000 OPS.
And he hits for huge power.
Right.
Home runs, 10 doubles. Stole 8 bases, just could not have played better.
Played shortstop well.
Yes, and all the reviews and some highlights that I saw, too,
were
he looks great at shortstop. Looks very solid at right. shortstop.
It was the one. It was the top percentile of what you were hoping to get
yes.
out of him that first month at St. Paul.
He was healthy. He was thriving on both sides of the ball, and he was showing a smoother, less sort of herky jerky swing with a less of a leg kick, which was a big question mark 2 years right. ago, and drawing walks, controlling the strike zone, which he's never been particularly good at, which right. speaks to the work he did behind the scenes,
right.
Trying to kind of work on his approach. Just a flawless start for a guy who,
right.
by the way, if he would have come out and hit 210, everyone would be like, that makes sense. He missed 2.5 years.
Right,
like,
exactly
let's give
right.
him some
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Just like you said, it's the 100th percentile outcome.
Right.
Then Carlos Correa gets hit by a pitch 2 weeks ago, and the initial reaction or belief was he fractured the middle finger on his right hand. That's going to be 2 months.
Right.
Turns out he did not fracture it. He just sort of badly bruised it. Ended up missing roughly 2 weeks instead yeah. of 2 months.
Royce Lewis was called up at the time thinking, when he was initially called up, everybody kind of thought, well, it's probably broken. But by the time he was playing in his first game, they already knew, well, Correa could be back. He could be back in time for the Astros series.
Right. They were hoping he would right. avoid the injured list.
That's right.
Turns out he tried to take ground balls, tried to throw, tried to hit, and was just swollen and right. sore. Right. So they said, we're going to put him on the injured list. So in the meantime, Royce Lewis played 11 games, I think for
that's
the Twins.
About right.
He had a grand slam against Cleveland. He had a three-hit game, I think, against Oakland, including his second home run. Right. He hit over 300, didn't strike out very much, looked I think he competent, made a couple years at short, but looked pretty
better
good
than
at short.
Competent at shortstop.
Yes.
Right,
capable of making very good plays.
He's capable, right?
Yes,
that's right.
Just again, the 99th percentile outcome in terms of his first 11 games right. in the majors, I would say, particularly right. given that he was sort of rushed there,
right.
With little notice right. and everything. So then, when they initially called him up, like you said, the expectation from everyone, Royce Lewis included, but the Twins, Correa, us, was he's up for however long Correa's out.
Right.
If that's 2 days, he's up for 2 days. If it's 2 weeks, if it's 2 months, whatever. He's up for that long. The only thing that changed in the meantime, in the 2 weeks that Correa ended up missing, so that when Correa came back on Wednesday in
right.
Oakland,
right.
what was different? Well, Royce Lewis played his ass off for
right.
2 weeks,
yeah.
basically.
I mean,
that's the only change.
Well, I mean, the only other change was, left field looked like a little bit more of a cluster.
Right.
Than,
well, there were some other
been.
Injuries involved.
Right. Miranda never really hit during his
Correct.
Time there. Like there were some other. There's clearly some other gaps that could probably be filled.
But all I mean is, if you would have right. told someone on the day they called up Royce Lewis,
right,
that as soon as Correa is back in the lineup, no matter what happens, Royce is going to go back to AAA, continue playing every day, continue playing shortstop, all that stuff. People would. At the time, I mean, hell, we said this.
Right, yeah, right.
And nobody was freaking out then. Where they go, well, that's
right.
natural. It's nice
yeah.
to have him.
Yeah, right.
He gets his
yeah.
first taste in the majors. Hopefully it'll be more than just a couple games. But, hopefully Correa's back too.
Right.
It's not like you want him to be out. And the only thing that changed is people fell further in love with Royce Lewis
yeah.
as a player and as a person.
yeah,
believe me,
yeah.
I've now talked to him, handful of times. Tremendous guy.
Right.
Just the most upbeat, chatty, throughout all of this,
right.
which is put me – to the test in ways. If I were in his situation, I would not be upbeat. And I'm not upbeat now. And like we said, couldn't have looked better at AAA, couldn't have looked better in his first 11 games in the majors. To the point that when Correa is back, when they bring back their superstar shortstop that everyone is thrilled to have on the team, by the way,
right?
People go, well, you can't send Royce back to the minors. But they did send Royce Lewis back to the minors, which
yep.
creates our second controversy. And as we talked about this on the Patreon too, I will just say up front, I disagree with the Twins' decision on this one.
Yeah.
I would have kept him in the majors, not saying to him, you're here forever, no matter how you play and no matter how the roster shakes out, but just saying to him, I'm of the belief that they can find at-bats for Royce Lewis for the next X number of weeks, and I think the situation would sort of solve itself in the sense that if he continues to play exceptionally well, as he has, well, then, of course, you want to continue finding him at bats. And if he goes instead into a 1-for-30 slump and suddenly looks like, a prospect who's in his first taste of the majors and has missed a ton of time and is not a fully formed superstar,
right.
then you can say at that point, all right, go back to the minors, get right,
right.
we'll think about calling you back. Instead, I know you...
I fall on the other side of it.
Right.
I don't think it's a huge mistake.
Well, I don't either.
Keep,
I don't think it's a huge
but both sides
I just disagree with it.
I, but I basically say, I think I would probably take this pretty much the same approach in that I'm looking to fill Royce Lewis in at a spot at some point here, right? I'm just doing it while he's playing full time in St. Paul. I'm not as convinced as you are that you can find everyday at bats for him in the majors, right? On the Patreon, I know we talked a little bit, we kind of argued a little bit about that, and we said, you know, you kind of thought there's a number of different positions you can do that. And, you know, I can see the point of that's not a terrible way to go either, which is let's try it for a week. Let's see if we can find him at bats, or if we just keep making the decision he ends up on the bench, you know, and
right, that's my thing.
I guess I can see that point too. That's not a bad way to go.
It's almost the reverse of what we always talk about with like the starting rotation, which is there can never be enough starters.
Right.
And it's like, well, if you do find yourself in a situation where he's on the bench for 3 out of 5 games,
right,
then yeah, you've sort of answered that question yourself and you can react at that point. But my feeling is let's see if you can find a way to find him
five games
a week, plus maybe a pinch run or a defensive appearance or something, or a pinch hitting appearance, right, something like that. And if you can, well, then that solves itself too. I will say that, you know, I disagree with sending him down, in part because of what you talked about, which is Miranda is not looking up to the task at the moment.
Right.
Larnick is not back. They have some other guys.
Although he might be today.
He hit a home run at Wichita last night. And the reason he's at Wichita instead of with the Saints is because they're going to Kansas City.
Right.
So he's an hour away, or whatever.
He's going to be activated this weekend, it looks like.
Right. But they also have a guy like Urshela, who, while very good defensively, is not hitting much and leads the league with 10 double plays. So you could get him some work at third base. But I will say this, within my disagreement, I think there were two paths to take with this, basically. And they're taking one of them, that part I'm fine with, which is this. If they would have sent him back to AAA, like they did, and they would have said, when asked, and they were asked, if they would have said, well, he's going to continue to be an everyday shortstop, that's all he's going to play,
right,
I think that I would have found even more fault in.
Right.
Because then
I understand
you're setting him up to
be only to be off limits
unless Correa is hurt again. Correa is hurt again.
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where if he keeps hitting 320 at AAA, which you want to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, let's step back here and say everything about Royce Lewis now is incredibly encouraging from his long-term standpoint.
Right, right.
And what's happening right now might be a 2-week diversion from that, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
But
or maybe a 1-week diversion.
Right. I mean, it could be a day. I saw Urshela slide into home yesterday and came up limping for a minute. And I thought, well, Royce, I hope you're on a flight right now. But here, let me just finish what I was getting to there, go back to that, which is if they would have said he's only going to play shortstop at AAA, then you're setting him up to be in a position where he can only fill in for Correa as opposed to playing alongside Correa. And then you're at a point where if he continues to thrive at AAA, you're doing two things at that point. Let's say it's July, and he's still hitting 300. He's still doing great at AAA. Well, then you're either telling him, tough crap, you're stuck at AAA all season.
Right.
Go win AAA MVP.
Right.
Or then you're deciding at that point, 2 months from now, okay, now we want you to start working at other positions because clearly we want you in the majors.
Right.
So I think within that, they sent him to AAA, and they said he's going to continue to primarily be a shortstop because we want him to get reps at shortstop. He's missed 2.5 years. But we're going to start to mix him in other positions.
Right.
We want him to get reps. And I know people looked at the box score last night, which, by the way, he was in the lineup at AAA last night, playing shortstop and leading off. He had a leadoff home run and had 3 hits and a stolen base, Royce Lewis. And I know people looked at the box score and saw him with the SS next to him and said, well, I thought they were going to move him around positions. Well, yeah, it was first day back. They want him to get comfortable and play shortstop. And he's going to get game reps at other positions. But being a AAA is not just about game reps. He's going to take 500 ground balls at third base before games, or you know, during off days, and you know, 1,000 fly balls in left field. Like the position he's at in the game, I think will be other than shortstop sometimes.
Yeah.
But don't confuse that with him not getting reps.
It might be they just take the weekend to try and teach him third base before they put him to third.
Exactly.
Base, you know, I mean,
so I think there was
not that you have to. He's have to complete like learn. You know, how to play left end in football or something like that, but there might be a couple things that he needs to know about.
They want him to be comfortable there as opposed. So I think within that, there were two ways it could go. One is the way they're doing, which is we're going to send him back to AAA for an undetermined period of time. Could be 2 weeks, could be a month, could be dependent on someone else getting injured.
Right.
And while he's at AAA, he's going to play a lot of shortstop, but some other positions. He's going to get comfortable at other positions so that 2 weeks from now, a month from now, tomorrow, whatever it is, when he comes back up, he's not just a shortstop. He can play third base. He can play left field. He can play center field. He
maybe
can play
first base.
For whatever it is. The other way they could have done that, which is the way I would have done it, was to take that exact same approach but in the majors,
right,
and say, you're going to start to get practice reps and pregame reps at other positions, right, and then once we think you're comfortable there, whether that's tomorrow, whether that's after a weekend, whether that's a week from now, then we're going to start to work you into the mix. And so I do think there's a middle ground there that they hopefully are kind of aiming for, which is a short return to AAA, focused on keeping him on track offensively,
right,
keeping him healthy, obviously, but improving or expanding his defensive flexibility. And when they get to a point where they feel like he's somewhat comfortable, you don't have to have mastered every position,
sure,
then bring him back up. My hope is that's the plan. I would have tried that in the majors, in part because I think they can just use the help. Right. And maybe that's different if Miranda were to have a couple, right, of big games here and, right, Larnett comes back, like could be tonight, obviously, right, yep, and has a big game.
Right.
Maybe that's a little bit different, but I do think whether it's in place of Urshela a few times a week, in place of Nick Gordon, in playing some first base, whatever it is, playing, right, some center field, getting, by the way, some reps at shortstop. You can move Correa to DH or give him a day off once in a while, at least
Buxton
in the near term.
Center field.
Right. I mean, I think there's an opportunity where you can, if not an everyday role, you can certainly find a role that projected over a full season would be 500 at-bats, which I don't think is bad for his development. I also just don't think it's bad for his development to work with the major league coaches and be around Buxton and be around Correa for as much as possible. So I disagree with that. I would have attempted to have that sort of increased defensive flexibility more on the fly. With that said, I have no sort of logical problem with them thinking he's better off doing that at AAA, particularly because they may feel like, look, this guy's coming off a torn,
right, exactly,
ACL.
Right, yeah.
Are we just going to throw his ass in left field and have him run into a wall or try to sprint after a ball in the gap and, right, you know, trip and fall? Like, I'm not saying that's likely, but I do think the injury does factor into their willingness to just kind of go, hey, sink or swim.
Right.
But, you know, my hope is he continues to thrive offensively. We start to see him get more comfortable at other positions. And 2 weeks from now, well, first of all, maybe it won't be an issue. Maybe everyone gets healthy in the Twins lineup,
right,
and they're just rocking and rolling, hitting, right, you know, three homers a night, and they're scoring eight runs a game, and, right, you say, yeah, leave Royce at AAA.
Or maybe somebody gets hurt.
That, I think, right, probably in all this.
Of the most likely scenarios.
That's the funny part, which is we're talking about, you know, flexibility and timelines, and everyone's upset, and could he have put the most likely scenario for any team, but especially we've seen with the Twins, is 3 days from now,
right,
someone pulls a hamstring,
right,
you know, whether it's third base, left field, center field, whatever it is, first base, right, somebody gets hurt, they're out for a stint that requires an injured list stint, and the Twins go, who's the next man up? Guess what? The next man up
that's
is
right,
Royce Lewis.
Right.
And, okay, he's gotten seven reps at third base now, right, so we feel a little more comfortable. That's the most likely thing.
Yeah.
Okay, before we move on to the Kirilloff, quite a controversy, but it could be if you squint hard enough.
People aren't getting as upset about it because, you know, the only way, unless those people are Kirilloff.
Right.
Right, I would think.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he's been upset about it.
He's
I'm just
taking
saying,
it well.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about one of my favorite places, Forgotten Star Brewing. Just up 94, right where 94 hits 694, basically. It's on River Road, near East River Road on 49th Avenue, in sort of northeast Minneapolis.
It's true northeast.
Right? Yeah, that's true. You're going to be driving past sort of an industrial park, a modern-looking industrial park, and you're going to be like, I thought this was supposed to be some cool building. Look at the smokestacks behind the modern industrial park. You'll pull into there, and when you come around the corner, you'll have the reaction that a friend of mine had, which is like, oh, holy cow. I had no idea this place is here. And, you know, it's a cool historical building with a lot of the history around it is about a World War II production facility that had outstanding service record and, of course, outstanding beer.
For the good guys in World War II. I always like to point that out because you never know.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, and here's you can go there. They always have, I think, at least 12 beers on tap. They're always cycling in new beers, new specials.
Although I'll tell you, I went there 3 weeks ago. They didn't have 12 beers on tap because I think they're just being they're being slammed right now. A lot of people are having trouble keeping up.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's great.
Dog friendly. Right? John takes Char there. She loves it.
They always have a charity beer on tap.
And if you go there and you say, Gleeman sent me.
Yes.
They will give you $1 off your first pint. And we have seen evidence of that. People have tweeted us pictures of them drinking their discounted pint from saying Gleeman sent me. So
award-winning beers, great spot, great environment. Go check it out.
Forgotten Star Brewing.
They check off all the boxes.
BetterHelp is something we've talked about. Here's how this works, basically, is a lot of people, there are certain barriers to getting help in therapy situations,
right.
Mental health situations. And one of the barriers is just not knowing who to contact, where to go, not knowing what fits in your insurance, all that stuff.
You're wondering if you need therapy, but you don't know who to talk to. You don't know how to start.
It also can be sort of daunting because here's the sadly ironic thing is many people have phobias or social interaction issues that they maybe want to work on.
Right.
But in order to work on those, you have to call someone on the phone or you have to go meet with somebody in person. Well, BetterHelp takes sort of the barriers for entry out of the equation and makes it a much smoother, less bumpy path, which is you can do video chats.
Right.
You can do live chats if you don't even want to.
You do phone chats.
Right. Yeah. Or you can just type stuff to someone. Which, believe me, there are times in my life where I'm like, I don't have the energy even talk on the phone. I would like to just ask someone this question.
It can also happen fast. Like under 48 hours, you can be matched for in-person therapy and matched to a therapist, which is, you don't want to wait 2 weeks to fight, and you don't want to have to hunt down
a
bunch of doctor's offices.
If you've been thinking about getting help with anything in your life on this level, and you find yourself one day in a month motivated to do it, take advantage on that day because the next day, the way this brains work is you might not be motivated to do it the next day. BetterHelp is customized online therapy, video, phone, even live chat with a therapist so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to, or you can if you do want to. Much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. The podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, so you can go and get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Gleeman. That's BetterHelp.com/Gleeman. Okay. Let's talk Kirloff.
One of our favorite sponsors.
Let's see. I think let me just make sure I got all the Correa Correa notes. Which, by the way,
Royce Lewis stuff out of your system.
Correa came back and looked good.
Yeah.
In his first game.
Yeah, first game.
Made some nice throws defensively, including nailing a guy at the plate right away.
Yeah. And,
the ball will find you.
Well, and given that it was a hand injury, that was not a given that he would be coming back strong.
That was one of the biggest things. I spotted him a couple pregames last week at Target Field, and all he was doing was just playing catch for a half hour.
Right.
And that's not because he needs to learn how to play catch. It's because he wants to sort of put pressure on that finger over and over in situations that will come up in a game, and he wanted to test it that way. So, yeah, it was big. Oh, one last thing on Lewis. I know Common Man was screaming about this, I'm sure. I'm sure everybody. it's not a service time issue.
It doesn't make sense that it would be a service time issue.
Here's the thing. There are some cases. I'm not putting it past the Twins to suppress service time.
Right.
They did it with Kirloff last year. They did it with Buxton several years ago.
Right.
They will probably do it in the future.
Right.
It's not happening currently with Royce Lewis. That was not a driving force behind this. And here's why. The cutoff for service time, the way it works is, there's a certain number of days in a Major League Baseball season. It's like 180 days or something. If you get to like 170 days, I'm just using rough numbers here, you get credit for a full year in the major leagues, which is why you see teams delaying calling up an elite prospect until the end of April or May 1st. Because the time will have passed so that even if they were to stay in the majors for the remainder of the season, they'll fall just short of what is considered a full season in the majors. They will not get a year credit towards free agency, towards arbitration, all that stuff.
Right.
Here's the thing, though, with Lewis. By the time they had called him up 2 weeks ago
to
step in for Correa, that cutoff had already passed. He was already past the point when he could have gotten a full year of Major League service time. So they could have kept him in the majors this whole time for the rest of the season, and he would have finished this season with 0-point-something years of service time as opposed to 1 year of service time. So it's not a factor. Now, the only way it could have been a factor You know, if you're someone who wants to yell about service time, here's your angle. This is the only way you can not sound illogical while yelling about it. Is part of the new collective bargaining agreement, if a rookie finishes top either two or three, I forget what it is, in the rookie of the year voting, they get credit for a full year of service time for that season, regardless of when they were called up. And so the thinking is, you might as well just call up your top prospects early if you think this guy's going to be a great rookie, because you might as well get the maximum number of games out of him, because if he wins Rookie of the Year or even finishes second or third for Rookie of the Year, he's going to get credit for a full year of service time anyway. So if you're yelling about service time, the only way you can really...
And you also get draft picks or something like
that. Right, but that's the other thing. Right. So, okay, they have to give... So if you would have to say to yourself... I think the Twins sent down Royce Lewis because they were afraid he was going to win Rookie of the Year. By the way, he's not one of the top contenders. He's only played 11 games. There are other guys who have been up all season who are having really good starts. But they would have to be afraid that he was going to finish top two or three for Rookie of the Year, and they were going to have to give him a full year of service time. So now they're sending him to AAA for a month so that when he comes back up, he's less likely to win Rookie of the Year. First of all, I believe that's absurd. Second of all, to your point, if he does win Rookie of the Year, or if anybody wins Rookie of the Year, the new CBA says you have to give him a full year of service time. That's from the Twins standpoint.
But you get back.
But you get back draft picks because they're trying to encourage teams to do it. So, that you know, look, I can't tell you with 100% certainty that service time isn't a factor here, but there's just no logical way that it would be.
The only other way it makes maybe a difference is that you know, he might become arbitration eligible in his third year as opposed to his fourth year. That would maybe cost the Twins...
$1 million, maybe.
$1 million, $2 million a year, I mean, something like that.
Again, they're not making decisions based on that. They pay $1 million for...
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I realize this is the thing people love to yell about.
Sure.
And I'm sure I'm going to go on the radio later and have to answer questions about this. But it's getting to be like Boy Who Cried Wolf on a lot of this stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Where it's just I mean, to some extent, the Twins have brought it on themselves, too, just so we're clear.
Yes,
you know
but
what
I mean? Just I'm begging people to just think for an extra 10 seconds about some of these scenarios.
Yep.
And think, instead of just screaming about service time, think, wait, is this even about service time? I'm just begging. I'm pleading. And I guess we're not doing our job if more and more people are in the screaming mode. Okay, speaking of guys who had their service time suppressed, last year, Alex Kirilloff, you may have noticed, was not called up until late April, even though he had technically made his debut in the playoffs the year before.
Right. That was because they were suppressing his service time.
Correct.
Correct, yes.
Now, it's not 100%, but that is what I think we were pretty vocal about that at the time, criticizing the Twins for it. So he came up and he played, what did he play, 10 games, 12 games? Then he hurt his wrist last year, last May, like May 10th, something like that. Good. Sliding into second base, turned out he tore a ligament in his wrist, went on the injured list, came back 2 weeks later, tried to play through the injury for roughly 2 months.
Right.
Hit like 260, but with very little power. Not super productive. And you can just tell he was not the guy we saw for the first couple of weeks. He's not the guy we had seen in the minors.
Right.
He was just kind of a slap hitter all of a sudden.
Right.
So in July, they said, enough's enough. The team's bad. You're clearly not at full strength. Shut it down. Have the surgery. You should have plenty of time to be ready for spring training. So they do that. He reports to spring training. He has roughly a normal-ish spring training. But having some soreness in the surgically repaired wrist.
Right.
Then he gets off to, I think, a 1-for-17 start in the majors and looks like he did last year, but even worse. He's swinging through pitches. His swing just looks kind of meek, like he's searching for contact and not trying to drive the ball. At which point he gets shut down again a few weeks ago and reveals, you know, I'm having continued discomfort in the wrist. It's painful to swing at times. It just doesn't feel right. So they sent him to go get looked at by doctors. He went, you know, MRI, CT scan, all that stuff. And they found no new damage, no new structural damage. So that doesn't mean he's not going through pain. That doesn't mean it's not a problem. It just means it's part of the recovery process from the initial surgery. And by the way, wrist surgeries can linger forever. Wrist injuries, you can possibly never be the same. But the hope is that as he plays through it, he can strengthen it, he can get more used to it, all that stuff. Well, so... they send him on a rehab assignment. He doesn't look particularly good on the rehab assignment, but then they call him back up quicker than they were probably planning because there were a bunch of injuries to other hitters in the majors. He comes back up. He plays, I don't know, five games, last week, basically. Got a couple of infield singles,
yeah.
but didn't drive the ball at all. Had trouble even sort of elevating the ball beyond ground balls. At which point, he's no longer rehabbing from the injury. He's technically on the active roster, which means he's not quote-unquote injured, even though clearly he's at less than 100%. They looked around and they said, Arise is playing first base, and he's playing pretty well. They had just called up Miranda, and they were hoping to give him, hoping he would provide a, right. a spark, which he really hasn't so far. And they said, where is Kirilloff better off here? Being a part-time player in the majors where he's clearly not himself?
Yeah.
Where every
also, where's the team better off well, right, as well?
Where every at-bat right. is going to be under a microscope when people are going to start to get frustrated with his lack of production yeah. because it's hurting the major league team.
Right. And we can't really play him every day because right. we don't trust
and
him.
And he was batting right. in the lineup right. when he was playing, right. which just it shouldn't happen if he's right. So they send him back to AAA a week ago, basically. And it's interesting because he's a guy who had just been at AAA on a rehab assignment, technically as an injured major leaguer. And now a week later or 2 weeks later, he's back at AAA just as a right. AAA player, right. which is much different because you are not collecting service time.
Right.
And here's another key thing, which is, you know, he had a big game two nights ago, finally. Four hits, a homer and a double, yes. which were his first extra base hits of the entire season, yep. minors or majors. So there's some hope there that he's finally able to drive the ball right. and maybe, you know, making progress at least towards being the guy he was before the surgery.
8-for-20 since his demotion.
Yeah.
5 games.
With a lot of walks, too. Yeah, I mean, he's getting on base. Right. But the key for him, if you're just kind of hunting right. box scores, right. is extra base hits.
Look for the power.
Is he right. driving the ball? Because yep. that's the whole thing that we haven't seen since the wrist problem. The one... So, you know, he can play his way back into the majors, particularly if Miranda's sent back and if they have any other injuries and all that stuff. Because he can play left, he can play right, he can play first, he can play DH, and he's a left-handed bat. But they're going to need to see him healthy and pain-free or at least less pain, and they're going to need to see him driving the ball. They're not going to call him up to be a, you know, hit try to hit like Luis
right,
Arraez.
Right.
They need him to hit like Alex Kirilloff. And so that's the big question. I will say that, you know, he even talked about this a week and a half ago. You know, there's no new damage to his wrist. It's not like he re-tore anything.
Right.
It's just recovering and getting right and adding strength and feeling comfortable with the initial surgery. But if this lingers and he continues to have pain at any point, there are further procedures that they can do. They just don't want to do that. I mean, you right. want to avoid that. There's something where you can shave down the bone and less you know, tension between there. There's other things you can do, and that might be on the table if he continues to struggle and has pain. They're obviously hoping to avoid that. But the interesting part now is if, let's say, a month from now, they get to the point where they go, this is not working, let's reevaluate, let's consider other surgical options.
Right.
If he were to have surgery, let's say, and miss a season –
He's no longer getting service time
because he's in the right. minors, not in the majors.
Yeah.
So that's a factor, too.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it could be that, you know, I don't know if it's breaking up scar tissue or he rediscovers something right. or something gets stronger than it used to be. And, you know, suddenly he's a valuable piece come August or September as well. I mean,
right. that's definitely the hope.
Ultimately, you are trying to get these guys prepared. The Twins, I think, especially. With an 0-for-18 streak or something like that, playing in a weak division, you know, I don't know if we talked about this last Friday or Monday, but essentially, kind of looking at this team and saying they're a good team playing in a weak division.
Yes.
You know that
they're
bodes
the only
well for the
team
postseason.
With a winning record right now.
Right, that's right. So you know what really you want to be prepared for is we want to be playing our best baseball in August, September, and right. especially October.
We want,
because then we're facing the teams in the other good right. divisions, the teams that won those divisions.
Well, I mean, we talked about it just now with Buxton, which is, you know, all this sort of gnashing of teeth and decision-making about resting him and all that now, it's really only important right now.
Right.
If you were to say, we have a way to guarantee he'll be in the lineup and feeling good and healthy on game one of the, you know, ALDS... Well, then all the stuff that's happening in May and June and July barely matters. And it's the same thing with Kirilloff. Like, this seems incredibly important now. And it is. I mean, it affects his career. I'm sure he'd rather be in the majors and all that. But if you said, well, come August or September or game one of the playoffs, he's going to be the Kirilloff we saw early on last year. He's going to be the guy who can hit 25 homers a year and bang a bunch of doubles. Then you go, all right, well, yeah, whatever happened in the in-between there, they just have to kind of get to that point. I mean, we've seen in years past, they've entered the playoffs each of the last two times they've been in the playoffs, 2019 and 2020, completely banged up.
Right, yeah.
I mean, to the point that in 2020, In 2020, Donaldson was not even in the lineup.
Right. Yeah.
Buxton was barely available because he was coming back from a concussion.
Right.
Had to pinch run, I think. And then the year before that, Kepler was banged up. Even Nelson Cruz had the wrist problem and was sort of a little iffy. Arise was banged up.
Right.
CJ Krohn was playing through a torn ligament in his thumb,
right.
I think.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'm probably missing guys. There were guys on the pitching front.
Right.
I mean, Randy Dobnak had to start a playoff game because everyone else was injured in the rotation.
Right.
So
it's
marathon, not a sprint, is the cliche with baseball. But the key with baseball is, like, not only is it a marathon, not a sprint, but there's such an incredible amount of value to be had in your final when you get to the finish line, running your fastest at the finish line, which is really difficult to do after a marathon.
In the same way that, you know, it's higher leverage in the ninth inning,
higher leverage in the ninth inning
than in the fifth inning, or much lower leverage if you're way ahead. You know, it can go either way.
Yeah.
It's the same way in September versus May. Oh, and it's especially that case, higher leverage in October.
Yeah. You run these 5Ks and 10Ks and half marathons and stuff like that.
Yeah, we do not speed up at the
end. Right. I was going to ask about that. You limp across the finish line.
No, we don't. We keep it steady pretty much, yeah. It's not uncommon the last mile, whatever it is our fastest mile for a shorter race.
Because you get a little adrenaline.
But boy, with the 10-mile in Philly, no, that was not our fastest mile. That was our slowest mile.
Not that you're not a good runner.
No, I'm not a good runner.
The professional marathon runner type of people, do they...
Do I know?
Right. But like the people who win the Boston Marathon or whatever.
Do they speed up at
do you think like the last 500 feet, are they just sprinting?
I have no idea. Yeah. I can't imagine they are.
Well, for my analogy to work with the twins in the playoffs, I need them to sprint
listen, I'm not saying that the games now don't count. Like,
yeah, you got to get to the playoffs first.
Yeah, the White Sox, you know, are going to be better than they are. And the Twins have a three-game lead. Now, on the other hand, they're in first place with a three-game lead. They've got 22 wins. That's still only the fifth best in the American League.
Right.
Like, 22 wins. There's four other teams. There's two teams in each division with more wins than the Twins right now. And those are the teams you're probably going to be facing in October.
Let me offer a counterpoint to that. They're 18-8 since the 4-8 start.
Yeah,
18-8 is the third best record in the world, or Major League Baseball, the world.
Right.
I believe behind the Yankees and the Dodgers, I think.
Well,
or possibly the Yankees and the Astros.
And we should mention they've got I think this time last week we were talking about the 21-game stretch they were about
to
face.
So they're 6 in.
Yeah.
They're 4-2.
They're 4-2.
They've won whole series.
Yeah, we were hoping for 13-8, I think is the number we were floating out there.
Why
right?
not?
So what they need to go 9-6 over those. So basically win.
Yeah. And now it's just all Royals and Tigers.
Yeah.
For the rest of it.
Yeah.
It goes Kansas City, Detroit.
Huh?
Road and then home
against
the two worst teams in the division, both of whom are well below 500.
Right.
You can make hay. What's the saying? Make hay while the sun shines.
That's right. Yeah.
I think that's right. This time last year, I looked this up. I don't know why. I just make myself sad. So they're what'd you say, 22-16, and they're three games up in the division.
That's right.
Last year, at this point, through 38 games, they were 13-25. Think about that.
Right.
13-25. They were 10.5 games out of first place already at this same point. So that's a 13.5 game swing, basically.
Right.
They went from 10.5 back, which is incredible after 38 games, to be 10.5 back.
Right.
To now leading by 3. That's all I'm saying. Enjoy this while it lasts. You don't know. You don't know.
Right.
Believe me, having sat through last season, you never know. This is the third best start in the Target Field era, behind 2019, of course, and 2010, the first year at Target Field.
Right.
We talked about 21 games here, where I would say at minimum you want to go 13-8. You want to distance yourself from. I think the Yankees are going to play the White Sox. Excuse me, are playing the Yankees now, while you're playing Kansas City. You want to sort of put a little extra padding between you and your closest competitors so that when the schedule does get a little tougher, when you do go through a rough patch or whatever, you have a little margin for error. By the way, do you remember all the hitting struggles that the Twins had early in the season? They were hitting 170 through 12 games or whatever. After yesterday's offensive explosion, they are now fourth in the American League in OPS for the season.
Right. Yeah.
It's a top five lineup, sort of like we expected.
Imagine how it could be if Buxton if we took the field.
How dare you, John? This guy sucks. A couple other notes on the offense here. Arise has essentially become the primary first baseman. By the way, Arise is playing great.
Yeah, I
know.
And
he missed a week with COVID and did have symptoms. That we talked to him about this. They had to take a medical plane back from Baltimore. Him, Bundy, and Baldelli. And he showed us a picture. He's on a gurney. And we said, oh, my God, Luis, were you, like, so sick you had to be in a gurney? No, there was only two actual seats and a gurney. So I have less seniority, and also I'm the smallest. So they made me sit on the gurney, which I was like, okay, that's about right.
That's funny.
So, yeah, he's playing exceptionally well. I mean, he's got twice as many walks as strikeouts. He's hitting 320. And, you know, you might go, well, that's nothing new for Luis Arraez to hit 320.
Right.
The league batting average is 230 right now.
Right.
Like, it's the lowest in, like, 50 years. Right. So the fact that he's just chugging right along, doing his usual thing, hitting 300, getting on base, I think he looks decent at first base. I mean, not that that's surprising.
That's fine. I think we talked about potentially him playing first base, you know, maybe a month ago. And the reaction, both of our reaction was like, really? They're going to put little Luis Arraez over at first base? Like, that's hard to imagine. That's
yeah.
worked out okay. I actually think the same thing might be happening with Royce Lewis at some point. Like, it's hard for me to imagine him at first base. But if first base continues to be sort of a black hole over there, I mean, all of the, you know, Sano, Kirilov, you know,
maybe you don't want to put anybody over there. It's
Miranda,
like the kiss of death.
You know? Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's cursed. Don't touch first base.
Who don't?
It's hard to play first base if you're not allowed to touch it.
Yeah, Scott Hatterberg was wrong. Ron Washington, Scott Hatterberg, and Moneyball were very wrong, apparently.
That's right.
The plan was to have Arise be the left-handed version, kind of like Kirilov, face all the righties, and then Miranda be the righty who faces all the lefties. My guess is that's going to come to an end here maybe today or tomorrow.
Right.
That
I wouldn't be,
assumption is that's the move for Larnach, although it wouldn't necessarily have to be.
No.
But Miranda just hasn't hit.
Right.
And he hasn't looked good defensively, but that's a whole other issue. But he just, not only hasn't he hit, I mean,
he
plenty
played
of guys.
A lot of first base in the minors either.
No, like, but he played, you know, he's got 50 games at first base or something like that. A lot of guys come up and don't hit. I mean, the exception is guys like Royce Lewis who come up and hit right away.
Right.
A lot of guys come up and hit, you know, 100 for their first 10, 15
Celestino
games.
Celestino did.
Right. I mean Buxton probably did.
Right,
tons of good
players.
Aaron Hicks.
Right.
God knows Aaron Hicks did it for two.
Right.
But I just mean, like, the first taste of the majors, often guys just fall flat on their face.
Right.
That's not necessarily in and of itself that discouraging for Miranda. The discouraging thing for me with Miranda is just the caliber of at-bats.
Right.
I mean, actually, Kirilov came up last year and went 0 for 15 when he first called.
Right.
But we weren't worried because he was smoking the ball.
Right. Yeah,
and he was, you know, he was just hitting line drives that were getting snagged in the outfield or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, Miranda is the opposite. He's just sort of, first of all, he's taking first pitch strikes, and then he's getting behind in the count, and then he's just sort of, you can tell he's hunting for contact.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of chopping the ball to second or hitting pop-ups, and it's like he's not driving the ball at all. He's not controlling the strike zone at all. Now he's striking out a little more than he did early on. And, you know, I still think he has a chance to be a really good player, but it is discouraging given how well he played last year.
Right.
Where at Double A and Triple A, I mean, he was one of the great hitters in minor league baseball.
And after a slow start this year in Triple A, he
started
heated
to come
up
on
quite
too.
A bit, too.
And it's just, we've not seen even an inkling of that type of player, a type of player who, you know, he didn't control the strike zone, but he could make good, hard contact and drive the ball to the gaps. And we just haven't seen that. And so my assumption is he's going to go back to Triple A.
Yeah, I would think so.
Once Larnach comes back. But I don't know who then plays first, unless they just play Arise every day at first. We've seen the other day at Target Field, Gary Sanchez was taking some ground balls at first base.
Yeah, that's true.
He's played there in the minors. Kepler's played some first base. I'm trying to think. Gio Urshela could play
some third
base.
Sanchez, by the way, is hitting a little bit.
Yeah, he's really
gotten
come
a little
on.
Hot streak. But
yes. Some clutch hits, driving the ball. And here's the thing about Sanchez. Has been perfectly solid defensively. And in fact, if you look at some of his pitch framing numbers, they're like in the 70th percentile or the 75th percentile. He's getting extra strikes, whereas in New York, he was giving away strikes, basically.
We talked a little bit about that on the Patreon, why we thought that is. Maybe it might have something to do with some of the pitchers that he's using. Right?
They've also changed the setup a little bit. I mean, one thing we know about the Twins over the last 3 to 5 years, they can get a guy to steal strikes. They did it with Garver.
Yep.
They're doing it with Sanchez. In the meantime, Jeffers has always been a great pitch framer because they worked with him in the minors to turn him into a – I think he's in the 90th percentile for pitch framing. So, yeah, Gary Sanchez. Meanwhile, Mitch Garver's been on the injured list, and he's coming back now for the Rangers, but he's going to be a DH only because he has an arm problem.
Oh, dear.
And he hasn't hit. So that, you know, that trade's looking – I wasn't a huge fan of that swap other than shedding the salary.
And before we talk about the opposite of that, a trade that didn't work, let's hit our last sponsor, Mack Weldon. I got to tell you, it gets to be summertime, and my uniform for the summer, and I will recommend this to our listeners, are polo shirts.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, you are a older guy, polo shirts. They're not the T-shirts, but they're not dress-up shirts. They're comfortable.
Yeah.
Polo shirts are... most of my wardrobe in the summer now has become polo shirts.
Yes, and Mack Weldon has a premium polos that elevate your plans with fabric technology they've built in to keep you comfortable as the temperature rises. Their lightweight Silver Peak polo and new super soft Pima t-shirt polo are great for summer. You can wear them anywhere with the Maverick Tech Chino short. Or the Radius Flex short. Yeah, show off those gams.
I like the polo shirt. And that's the nice thing about polo shirts. You can wear them with pants. You can wear them with shorts. It's nice.
Yeah. Or, you know what? Pantsless. Do it, too. That's always a good look for a guy. Check out Mack Weldon for yourself, and you can save 20% off your first order.
If you do go pantsless, Mack Weldon has great underwear.
Yeah,
we know that.
True.
Good quality materials.
That's right. Yeah. And if you want pants, they have good pants, too. Visit MackWeldon.com/geekpod. It's not Gleeman. It's MackWeldon.com/geekpod, GEEKPOD. Yep. And then enter in the promo code geekpod. Again, that's MackWeldon.com/geekpod. Enter the promo geekpod and you get 20% off. Stock up on the warm weather essentials that you've been missing.
Okay. That's right.
The other news, it was not surprising
unforeseen.
At this point.
No.
We kind of saw it coming, is that Chris Paddock yesterday was announced that he had Tommy John surgery, which was that was the fear all along, basically. That means he's going to miss the rest of this season. If things go exactly as planned with no setbacks, he will be ready for spring training next year, ready in the sense that he can throw off a mound.
Right.
They can start to sort of plan things out. You know, I think it's possible. See,
it's possible he'd be ready on the opening day roster,
right.
But it's probably
Tommy
more
John
likely
surgery,
he'd be doing an extended spring training.
Initially, or even 5 or 10 years ago, it was generally viewed as a minimum of 12 months and often 12 to 18 months on the recovery front. And in fact, if you go back and look, Chris Paddock had Tommy John surgery when he was in the low minors with the Marlins in 2016, I want to say, when he was like 19 years old.
Yep.
And it took him basically 2 full seasons to get back. And there's plenty of examples in Twins history where that's the case. 12 to 18 months, sort of a year and change, a season and change.
Yep.
You know, if you have it in June, you're going to be back the next August, let's say, something like that.
It was a big difference between undergoing the knife in April, where you missed two seasons, versus September, where you miss one.
The Twins are among a growing number of teams, still the minority, but a growing number of teams that have taken or have embraced a slightly different technique in the Tommy John surgery itself, that leads to often 9 to 10 months as the recovery period instead of 12 to 18 months. And we saw one of their first prominent examples was a prospect named Blaine Enloe, who was drafted, I think, in the second round of the year they took Royce Lewis in 2017.
Might have been a supplemental pick, but that's right.
He was a guy who was advancing pretty solidly up the Twins system, was a top 20 Twins prospect. Some people really liked him as one of their kind of underrated pitching prospects. Right-handed pitcher, starting pitcher, good strikeout numbers. Blew out his arm last year. And they insisted the whole time, it's not going to be 12 to 18 months. We think with him especially, he can be back in 9 to 10 months. Sure enough,
he's
at Double A now. Yeah. He just pitched his first official game of the season at Double A. He was throwing in spring training. I saw him throw in spring training. And it's been, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been less than 12 months.
Right.
And so that's the hope with Chris Paddock as well. Now, that doesn't guarantee anything.
Is there also the hope with Kenta Maeda?
Yes. Well, that's why we're talking about Kenta Maeda possibly being a bullpen option in September,
which
he had the surgery in August of last year, I think, or something like that. So now that changes things, because think of it this way. Chris Paddock is having the surgery in mid-May. It was 12 to 18 months as the recovery period. The earliest you're thinking about getting back is the middle of next season. And if you're closer to the 18-month side, he could miss the entire 2023 season.
Right.
In which case, you only have one season left of him, 2024, before he's a free agent. Well, that changes. That wipes out so much of the potential value of that trade. If, however, they're able to get him back in 9 to 10 months and back to a point where he can be a factor.
And if he returns back to himself.
Then, well, what's 9 to 10 months from right now is basically next spring,
which
gives him some chance to be ready for opening day. And if not, even if that's optimistic, to potentially be a factor by next April, late April, early May.
Which, by the way, would not be a service time issue.
Right? He's collecting service time no matter what. He's going to be a free agent after 2024 no matter what.
That's right.
Obviously, when you trade for a pitcher in what was, I'll use this word again now, controversial trade, certainly trading your all-star closer in Taylor Rogers the day before opening day is controversial.
Yes.
And I said it's not a trade I would have made, although I understand the logic of
it. I get it.
They got 3 years of Paddock, 2 years of Emilio Pagan, and a young relief pitcher as the player to be named later, for one season of Taylor Rogers. From a value proposition, I think that makes perfect sense.
But
my question was just, are you removing too much value in the short term and trying to recoup value in the long term?
And especially in what is a critical area for this team, a team that they really suffered in last year with their bullpen.
Right. Their bullpen's been damn good.
It didn't look that way
3 days into the season when Tyler Duffy blew a save.
We thought, here we go.
They just traded Rogers, and now the bullpen's going to implode. The bullpen, I think, I looked it up 3 days ago. I don't know if it's changed. They're number two in all of baseball in win probability added.
Yeah.
Joe Smith has been great. Yeah. Duran has been great. Griffin Jacks has been great. After that first hiccup, Tyler Duffy has actually been very good.
Yeah.
And Pagan, well, he's walked way, way, way too many guys. He's got a 1.5 ERA, and he's only... struggled once, really.
And his WPA is, I think, pretty good.
For the most part, closed out the games. Now, it's been eventful to close out those games.
That's right.
And so I don't know. Maybe Taylor Rogers gets them one more win at this point.
Maybe.
Now, that doesn't mean they won't regret that 3 months from now if their bullpen struggles and Taylor Rogers has been almost perfect for San Diego. But they didn't make that trade because they thought Taylor Rogers was a bad player.
Right.
They made that trade because they thought he was going to leave as a free agent, so they cashed in 1 year of Taylor Rogers for 3 years of Paddock, 2 years of Pagan, and potentially 6 or 7 years of the young, I can't remember his name,
Brian
Pena, I want to say, but that's not right.
Medina, yeah.
Correct. 19-year-old right-handed, good fastball in the low minors. Now, this changes that equation, too, because now instead of 3 years of Chris Paddock, you've gotten 5 starts. I think he threw 22 innings for year one.
Right.
Well, that's done now.
Yeah.
Year two is now in some question. I think at most, if you're trying to pencil in value for next season, you're maybe counting on a half a season for him, and you don't know how he's going to be. How is he going to return? So most guys make it back fine from Tommy John surgery, but it is his second one,
right?
And some guys don't make it back fine from Tommy John surgery, and other guys... takes him a while.
Or make it back, but don't make it back to the 100th percentile.
Right. So at this point, you've gotten 5 starts out of him. You maybe can count on a half a season next year, and then you've got 2024. So it's more like a year and a half of Chris Paddock now. You've still got 2 years of Pagan, although, it's unclear if they're going to want the second year of Pagan if he keeps not throwing strikes. But right now, that's worked out okay. So, if you were 50-50 on that trade, which I think we both kind of were, we were maybe 49-51 on the trade, 49 being we wouldn't have done it. But
I was probably 60-40, but yeah.
It was a reasonable enough trade.
Right.
And I think in slightly different circumstances, it's even a trade I would have done.
I think almost any other time I would have done it in November.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right.
Right. And it was still the off season, so I don't know why it's so much different the day before opening day, but it is.
So a couple things. One is, this changes the upside of the trade. It doesn't mean it's a failure, but it means we're going to have to wait to evaluate.
Sure, yeah.
And what it also means is in the meantime, the Padres are racking up points on the trade because Rogers is thriving and healthy.
Right, yeah.
The Twins' value on this trade has been pushed back further and further. But I've also seen a lot of reaction of, boy, the Twins got screwed again, like they did with Sam Dyson, acquiring a pitcher only to have him immediately be injured, basically. And I think this is somewhat different than Sam Dyson. The end result is the same, obviously, but they didn't realize Sam Dyson, and this is still in dispute, had a pre-existing arm problem. they believe he that was the case. They now believe that was the case, but the Giants say that wasn't the case. With Chris Paddock, his medical history was well known,
right?
Because much like Byron Buxton, he has a lengthy medical history.
Sure.
And last year, he spent a couple months on the injured list and then returned and struggled a little bit because he had a partially torn elbow,
right?
And decided rest, rehab, you know, platelet-rich plasma injections and stem cell, whatever, instead of immediately having Tommy John surgery for the second time. And the hope was he can continue to pitch through it for X number of years. Some pitchers are able to do that.
Yep.
And actually, he looked pretty damn good, I thought, through four or five
starts.
Yes,
right.
Plenty promising. I mean, he was as billed as a potential, you know, number three starter. But this, while not inevitable, is not shocking.
But the risk did not pay off.
Right.
Yeah, they took a risk. How big a risk it was is, you know, you can debate that what that is. But it doesn't really matter how big a risk it was at this point. It didn't work.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I will say that, you know, it's tricky because we are kind of 50-50 on the initial trade in terms of value received.
Right.
But they clearly liked the value they received. And part of the reason that they were able to get Paddock plus another reliever plus a minor leaguer for one season of a relief pitcher,
right,
which is just, you know, in the abstract, a pretty good return,
right, yeah,
for one season of a relief pitcher,
right,
was the question surrounding Paddock's elbow. The Padres knew it. The Twins knew it. Every team in baseball knew it, that there was risk attached to him, both from a performance standpoint and from a what happens if this gets worse, you're going to be without him for a year or two. Well, that was baked into the sort of Padres' willingness to include him in this trade for Rogers. So, yes, that's the risk they took. They knew the risk. You know, whether they thought they could prevent it and all that stuff is up for debate. But they knew the risk. That's how they got Chris Paddock. A fully healthy, good-performing Chris Paddock, if you call the Padres and say, will you send us him, a Pagan, and another player for one season of Taylor Rogers, they'd go, well, why the hell would we do that?
Right.
The reason they're willing to do it is because he had a much greater risk than a normal pitcher attached to his elbow. Now the risk has come to fruition.
Right.
I mean, there's no way around that. So it's turned what I think was sort of a toss-up, reasonable, logical, but, you know, questionable trade, given the timing, into one that is now much more likely to look like a loss. But it doesn't mean it has to be a loss, but it's certainly going to look like one in the near term.
You talked about the benefit of the timing in terms of, you know, how much playing time he might still have and to produce. Where the timing doesn't work out as well is going into the offseason as you're taking a look at what the starting rotation is going to look like in spring. You don't know if you can trust
Paddock
or not.
Count on him.
You can't really count on him. Suddenly he's your sixth, maybe your seventh guy. You might also have a similar situation with Maeda. You're not, you know, hopefully he's back. Hopefully he's performing, but you're performing in the bullpen. How much do you trust him to really be at his own? So now you've got two question marks. Can you count either one of them? Now you've still got to find five guys for April, probably. And, you know, hopefully one of those is Ober. Hopefully one is Ryan. Hopefully one is Wander. And, you know, maybe you're starting. And hopefully one is Gray. Right. That's okay. You know, maybe you can afford to have them be sort of secondary options. Best case scenario, they come back. But it does mean that the off season is. Yeah, it'll be interesting this offseason to see what they end up planning with the rotation and how they end up handling, you know, having Paddock back, knowing that you have him and back for, you know, years 5 and 6 of your team control of him is different than what they're going to be facing. They're not really sure they can count on year 5 or year 6. They're going to have to offer him arbitration. No, it's going to be
it's going to be
about what he made this year.
Right.
You know, just a little bit of a bump. You're going to have to do that. And you're going to have to hope that it works out well.
I agree. Yeah, it makes it hard from a planning standpoint,
right,
certainly. But I will say, and you kind of touched on this, but just to draw it out further, is like if it would have been this year and Paddock, you know, this offseason would have been rehabbing,
right,
it would have been much trickier because they largely had to fill their rotation with veterans.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The hope would be, as you said, next year,
right,
next spring, well, you got Ober, you got Ryan, you got Winder, you might have Balazovic, you might have Simeon Woods Richardson, and Sonny Gray is still around, and, you know, who knows, maybe they bring in another veteran or something.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to sort of say Paddock is our seventh guy and maybe our in-season depth at some point.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
If
if you've got four of those spots open, as opposed to
they're filled by young, cheap,
four filled, right,
guys you don't have to go spend on. Now, it would be different if you just had one young pitcher and you said, well, we got to find three
guys. The way, it has been the case basically like the last three, 4 years where they've had, you know, Kyle Gibson's gone, Odorizzi's gone, blah, blah, blah. You know, we've got to fill four spots in the rotation.
Yes.
The next year, we have to fill another four spots in the rotation. You know, it's been...
biding time, basically, until they're in a position like now where you have three or four or five or eight young starting pitchers.
I'm going to knock on wood, hoping younger players...
So, but with Paddock out of the picture, Bundy's back from the COVID list.
Right.
Ober is going to be back during this series, get one rehab start. Basically 2 weeks, I guess. Now they have six starters again.
Right.
It's just Winder, who began the season in the bullpen, has replaced Paddock basically as the sixth starter. Although Winder's last outing was in relief of Bundy, who was on a short leash piggyback situation.
I think that had more to do with having an off day that they could kind of afford to do that.
Bundy wasn't built back
well because
he had missed
that's
3 weeks or whatever. Yeah. But so here's your six now. Whether they stick with a six man rotation or bump Winder back to long relief for a bit. You have six starters again, which is exactly how you kind of began the season before you had confidence in Winder. You have Sonny Gray. You have Joe Ryan. You have Bailey Ober. You have Chris Archer. You have Dylan Bundy. And you have Josh Winder.
And in Winder's previous role, you've got Devin Spelzer.
Right.
Let's not forget him, who had to start with him the last week, too.
I think he's going to make one more start, at least, against Kansas.
Not only did he pitch well here, he's been pitching well in St. Paul. You know, he had a bad start of the year last year, and but he had that numbness in his fingers or something. That seems to be gone.
Yeah.
I'll be really interested to see
Devin Spelzer,
if he's sort of an unanticipated bonus in this season.
I think he will be. I mean, we talked to him after he threw the five innings of one-run ball in his first start in like a year for the majors. And it was at Target Field. Who the hell was he playing? Cleveland, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah, Cleveland. And he said basically, it's been a rough couple years for me.
Yeah. He looked like his breakthrough was 2019.
Right.
And then,
I mean, he made 15 starts for them in 2019. He had a 3-something ERA. He threw strikes. Yeah. I mean, he's never going to overwhelm you with stuff. He's high 80s, low 90s. But he throws strikes. He has good breaking ball. He's not,
for the most part, when he's been healthy, he's been good.
Yes.
Since 2000.
In the minors and the majors. Right. I mean, I think there isn't a ton of upside with him, but as just a functional fifth starter, long reliever, sixth starter type of guy, I mean, he's perfect depth, and I wonder how long he's going to stick. I did hear Phil Miller actually checked on this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we were wrong about this. We talked about this.
He was showing on all roster resource and the publicly available stuff that he was out of minor league options.
So we thought they
had to keep him. Wow, them calling him up to make this spot start either means they're willing to lose him on waivers or they're planning to keep him in the majors. Phil checked into it, and he was given an extra option year.
Yeah, I think he asked Spelzer. Spelzer corrected
him. Well, Spelzer corrected him, and then Phil asked one of the front office guys. So to correct it there, so that means
he has one option left because in 2020 when he was sent down, he was only sent down for like less than 10 days or something like that. So
it's a lot of roster minutiae, even for a nerd like me who likes roster minutiae.
Yeah.
The homestand, Falvey did a media session, answer some questions about injuries and stuff like that, and then after the microphones were turned off, he stayed and was just sort of answering random questions from us. Right. And we got to a point where Doe and I just basically cornered him and asked him every nerd ass roster minutia question to the point that
they've been dealing with the minutia because of this COVID thing.
There's so many weird things about what's the rule on this, to the point that Doe, one of the greatest nerd questions I've ever heard, we're like 15 minutes in, but Falvey's answering every like weird, how does it happen when a guy's outrighted and blah, blah, blah. We're trying to get clarification. I thought I knew all this stuff, but there's levels to it. And Doe finally says to him, here's something I've been wondering for a long time. And I think, oh boy. He says, what does the actual waiver wire look like? And I thought, that's a effing great question.
Right. Is it
what
just
is
a report?
The physical waiver wire?
Right.
They get a daily email. Okay. With people who are on the waiver wire, then there's a computer system where you basically go in and claim a guy, and then they file it, and then the next morning you get another email that says, you were awarded this claim, or you were not awarded this claim. Never occurred to me like, well, there's a physical waiver wire somewhere.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's obviously not an actual wire, but like,
that's funny.
Anyway. There's all kinds of weird roster stuff, but I think the fact that Smeltzer has another option remaining means they could send him back to AAA, yeah, I mean, which I wouldn't be shocked by.
If they do that, then Winder just probably is moving back to his swingman role.
Well, part of it depends. Right. Do they want to continue with a six-man rotation, or do they want to go to a five-man rotation?
Right. Yeah.
If you want to continue with a six-man rotation, then Winder's the sixth starter, and then, yes, Smeltzer can be the long
you're
reliever.
A little short on left-handed relievers right now. Colomb's out, right?
Yes.
And
Theobar's the only lefty.
Theobar's been okay, but
I don't know that that matters that much.
Yeah,
I think that's one of those that matters in theory.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, yeah, you'd like a couple lefties.
I like Smeltzer as a left-handed reliever because I trust him versus right-handers.
Right, except they're going to want to use him as a long man instead of like a matchup. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, he could be the second lefty. That's it. We got time? Are we done?
We know. We're done. We're at 1:30. Yeah.
I've been promoing this inning-by-inning tour of Target Field by John Bonus for about 52 episodes.
But you're going to have to sign up for the Patreon probably to get it. It'll either be Monday or Wednesday,
we'll
baby.
Or we'll forget to do it on the Patreon, and we'll be back on this one next week. Yes. Okay. So we didn't really plug the Patreon much, but we're back into the twice-a-week, at least once and sometimes twice-a-week groove on Patreon. And that's why you're listening to this show on a Friday or Saturday instead of on a Sunday.
If you would have been subscribing this past week, you'd have had the immediate reaction to the Buxton Furrer. If you would have,
Mind Fuhrer. Oh boy!
If you'd have also had an immediate reaction to Royce Lewis being sent down, that was supposed to be a mailbag episode, and it was. But we spent the first 25 minutes in emergency podcast mode because Royce Lewis was being sent down.
That's the idea behind the Patreon. If you're unfamiliar with it, we would love to have you join us for the rest of the season.
I think it's worth trying.
I always phrase it as our little private club for Twins Talk.
Right.
It's commercial free.
Yep.
Sometimes we curse on it. Sometimes we talk about stuff that we would be less inclined to talk about on this show just because it's more of an intimate, smaller audience.
Sure,
and it's private. You can't just listen to it.
Right.
You know, a Twins employee can't just tune into it. They have to actually subscribe, which there are several who I've seen their names pop up. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh, no. But we would love to have you join in. Yeah, like John said, the way it works is, you know, if somebody gets hurt on a Tuesday, we talk about it that night or the next morning.
Right.
If there's a trade, if there's a call-up, if there's a particularly memorable game, we talk about it
in the moment. A number one prospect demoted.
Right. We talk about it in the moment instead of waiting sometimes an entire week to talk about it on the free show.
Yeah.
And we also, we're going to have some guests on coming up that we're in the process of booking that we're excited about, that you guys have been clamoring for. And we do weekly or every other week mailbags where you can just straight up ask us stuff and we, you know, you can sort of decide the topics for the day.
Right.
So we would love to have you join us on the Patreon podcast. New episodes, you will be charged $1 when we put them out. But if we don't put out an episode, let's say for a week or a month, you're not charged anything. That's you're only charged $1 each time a new episode comes out. It's Patreon, Patreon. Patreon.com/Gleeman. We would love to have you sign up. Give it a try.
Also, thanks to our sponsors, Soda Stick, Sunday, Forgotten Star, Mac Weldon, and BetterHelp. Wow, they've all been real good to us.
Go get those polo shirts and walk around pants.
Goodbye.
Bye.